bonus episode of The Meta. I am your host, Jerry Larson. Joining me once again is the one, the only, William Hungerford. Hello, Will.
Hello. Welcome to take two of the podcast. We had some technical issues, but don't worry, we didn't get too far. So we're only on question one, so I'll say that exactly the
same. Awesome. I mean, of all the technical difficulties I've experienced in my long career of podcasting, this one's been pretty minor.
We say so
knock
far. We say
knock so far. On wood.
Yeah. So I am to understand that you have a bunch of listener questions.
It is true. Let's dive into them.
Let's dive into them.
First off, we have Philly Ruthers. He says, is 3D printing starting to impact upon game development beyond removing shipping as a thing? It feels like there could be really interesting ways game rules could be developed with the ability to 3D print models to be massively customizable within specific parameters. Are you looking to explore this more? If so, how?
So just so it's clear, our first game that's coming is not a 3D. It is going to be a traditional hobby game done in CO-Cast thermal resin. But yeah, I agree that 3D printing has a lot of cool customization options. That said, I don't know that they necessarily bring anything super new to the table. Games have had modularity forever. Games Workshop's been for decades in the idea of just, you know, you have different parts to your miniature. You put on the part that represents this gear, this weapon, this armor, whatever it might be. And that's represented, you know, with different rules. What 3D printing, I think, does bring the ease of access to being able to customize your miniature, you know, more easily. We see that on a lot of the RPG characters like Hero Forge and stuff, where you just sort of create anything you can think of, you know, just like you can make your wizard look like your wizard kind of had to find or try to put together. You can really find all those parts. And I think that's where the biggest impact will be, customizing not just pieces for game make, but also customizing to make it like your model. And I think that will be explored more and more as we get more 3D printing, as it becomes more widely.
All right. So next question. This is from Zap Brannigan. He says, how will the rules and lore be distributed for Rivenstone? Digital only, physical, or messenger pigeons?
Not messenger pigeons. They're not very reliable. Current plan, and obviously plans are subject to change, but the current plan is both physical, and that when you buy starters, you will have a rule book inside of it. You will have cards. You just got samples of the full color double-sided cards for their stat cards recently. They look fantastic. But there'll also be, I think you kind of have to, this day and age, have digital. You want the flexibility, if you do an errata, provide people with digital copies of those cards. And just having everything in one place, very easy. I'm also hopeful that when the game is launching, that we're able to let people's, you know, without having to buy a copy of the game, read the rules and what you think and pick it up.
Next question from Zap Brannigan. He says, will any of the characters slash units have restrictions on what cross-faction things they can be taken with?
Yes. But maybe not the way you think. So you might be thinking more of a traditional like animosity style. This model won't work with this model. But the way that the army list building in this game works is you choose your heroes. Your heroes dictate what followers. And then you choose a coalition. And a coalition is a really strong army-wide sort of like playstyle defined benefit. Those coalitions are usually limited in some capacity, like mono faction or only this certain type of heroes, you know, only machine heroes, only, you know, beast heroes, things like that. There is a coalition that's just take any heroes, it definitely has the weak. Oh, hey, Jay, you there?
Yeah.
Oh, it said my connection was lost. Were you hearing me the whole time?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we'll just edit this part out. But there is a coalition that lets you take everything, but it has no. So your restriction is that you're basically deciding how much you want to have in your list. But there is not just a with this kind of.
All right, so next question is from David. He says, I guess this would be difficult to answer, but I would also appreciate it very much if you could, quote unquote, calm some nerves here. How do you plan to get minis to the European Union? Will it be through regular distributors, i.e. as good as Fantasy Flight Games, or as problematic as it has been to get War Machine and Horde miniatures to us for us lately? Or do you plan to use Kickstarter?
Unfortunately, I'm not really great to answer that. You know, I'm the game designer here at Broken Down. I don't handle any, so nothing regarding, you know, the actual production, shipping, the business. So I know that obviously, you know, global community is very important to it. But as for what the exact plan that's going to be in place, make sure that, you know, everyone has equal access to the miniatures, I can't speak to that with any level of expertise at all. So it's not something that's being ignored, but answer for you, unfortunately.
All right. Next question from Zap Brannigan. He said, there's been a lot of talk about developing games for casual players versus competitive players. Do you think there are differences between these players in general and for miniatures games specifically? Can you speak to what different factors you focus on to target each group?
There's definitely a difference. That doesn't mean the two groups can't coexist and play games with one another. But, you know, competitive players are looking to optimize their lists, optimize their strategy, learn the ins and outs of the games, not only what their own list does, but counter their opponent's lists, their opponent's strengths and weaknesses. They keep up with the meta of what's going on, what lists and model choices are strong, and it's a very big commitment to a competitive player. You also kind of, if you're just focused on competitive strictly, you do sort of cut yourself off. Once a line gets big enough, there will always be a top 20% if you're looking to play competitively, and that means that bottom 80% of miniatures, you know, they don't make the cut, so you're not too super worried about them. You might be like, oh, that thing looks super cool, but I'll never play it in it. Whereas if you don't care and you're not playing that hardcore level, then you're just getting whatever you want. You're playing, you know, you probably want to, I don't necessarily buy, I don't care if I was, I think you do to some degree. The idea that like you put all your miniatures and then your opponent just kills everything before you get to go, for example, they just pick you up top of one. That can't, like, you want to engage, you want to play the game, but casual players aren't going to go as hard. And they're going to play the thing, look cool, they're going to have fun. They'll, I think if they take a loss, they might learn some lessons, but they're not going to as deeply. They'll also play in a lot of non-homebrew formats. They'll also homebrew their own stuff up. That's kind of like the main differences to me. And then there's the shades in between. It's not just binary one side or the other. You've got semi-casual. They mainly play casual, but they'll go to a tournament with their friends and have fun. And then you have people that want to play in tournaments, but like they don't want to go super hard. They just want to well enough. Like they do go 3-1 in there. The way that you target both of those, game balance is very important for any sort of competitive play. Clear, concise rules are really important for any side of sort of, you know, competitive play, which is something we are striving for. And at the same time, having rules that are strictly for fun that are unbalanced. And we even come out and say that in our rule book. Like the scenarios in the rule book, we have some that are symmetrical and we have some that are eight. And they even say in the description, this will be harder for one player to win over the other. And it's designed that, like, you know, holding off from being pushed or wailing, you have to be the defender, stuff like that, where you start in a bad position on the table edge or the table board and your opponent shows up like on the edge to come out and attack you. And those can be really fun for K because it's kind of a check, like, okay, what's the list I can make that can hold up the things like, so we want to make sure there's a little something for.
All right. So next question from Joe G. He says, if everything looks like a hammer, are you in fact a nail?
Everything looks like a hammer. What kind of hellscape do you live in where everything looks like? Can you imagine? You walk outside and the cars are driven by hammer tires. I don't want to live in this world.
Okay, so next one is how important is playstyle diversity within a faction and within a game?
Within a game, very important. Well, I can't say within a game is a giant broad stroke statement, because some games it's all we're all playing the same style. But I think in miniature war games, the kind of games that I enjoy designing, giving people different options, you know, having that different faction flavor is very, very important. As for how much diversity will faction, it kind of comes down to how big is the faction and is the game wide? Say you make a game where there's four models per, then you're not going to have a lot of playstyle diversity in those factions, but you have a lot of playstyle options versus a game that has four factions, 20 models per faction. Then it's kind of, you've got playstyle diversity in both the factions across factions. I think the important thing, it's a form of player aid where they go, I like to control lead, or I like to play with heavy range limits, or I want to get up and just be like a big beat, and giving them that option and letting them see the different, you know, play styles they can go after. I think it was Mark Rosewater who was talking about me, who said, like, you've got the players in Magic who want to build giant stompy. You have the players that want to control the game, and you have players that want to like do a crazy combo. And as long as you kind of like, I think there was a fourth one that I don't remember off the top of my head, but it was like, as long as you appeals to those players, then you're in a good spot to kind of letting the player do whatever it is that they want to do most, no matter what, you know, colors they want. I think it's the same for war game. You're gonna have people that just want to have big stompers, people that want to control the game, people that want to be pure aggro, gun line, the whole variety. Like Rivenstone, we're making sure that when wave one comes out, there's only gonna be so many models, but there'll be a good diversity within wave one, and then we're already planning out the future waves well into the development of it, and making sure that we're just adding on while keeping each faction distinct so that Iron Guard feels like Iron Guard and so on and so forth.
Next question from Joji. He says, did you pre-order Hero Quest? If not, are you considering picking it up at its general release?
I did not pre-order it. I don't think I need to pick it up because I think some of my friends are, and that's the kind of game where just really one person needs a copy. And I have so many gen crawlers that my game closet is full right now. So if no one else ends up picking it, I will. I'll have to figure out how I'm going to make room for it. But fairly certain people that are getting it, and I'll just play with them.
Dragon Pup says, what's on your Thanksgiving menu this year? Jay, you can answer this since you're the foodie. He knows this because I love P.F. Chang's.
Oh, yeah, obviously. It's a sign of every good meal. I actually don't know what I'm going to be served this year. I'm going to my girlfriend's family Thanksgiving up here in Seattle. And I was over there helping the other day, and I asked if they wanted me to bring any gumbo. And they said, no, we would have too much to save the gumbo for. They wanted it for New Year, where they wouldn't have as much of a feast. So apparently there's going to be a lot of food, but I don't know what to expect. So that's a turkey, probably. My sister and I might make gumbo for ourselves. We think gumbo.
Fair enough. I think there is a very high chance that I will be eating some take and bake pizza that we pick up on Wednesday, on Thursday. Mostly because, Brian is having to do vegan, for health reasons. And yep. B, I woke up with a head cold, yesterday. And so I think we were initially planning on going to some friends, but, seems like a bad idea to expose people to this, so we're just gonna be staying home ourselves.
You could get, like, since you gotta do vegan, don't they make vegan turkey substitutes, right? Like tofu turkey, a tofu.
Yeah, we were going to some friends who they've started doing plant-based stuff as well, and they were gonna do like a vegan turkey and stuff like that. But here we are, so it's fine, Brian. Craves pizza all the time anyway, so
okay, so he'll be happy.
Yeah. Okay, next question from Joe G. He says, what are your three cardinal rules when you dungeon master a role-playing game?
My three cardinal rules are: make sure there is something for everyone to make sure every player feels that their voice is heard at the table, and the third one's it's a cop-out answer, but it's just kind of true. It's just be prepared for it. You know, I go into every session planning out, you know, kind of where I want this to go and what the story will be. And I would say well over 50% of the time, the players take it, and I have vastly improved my improv skills thanks to my minions of playing D.
All right, so next question from Joe G. They are related to Magic the Gathering.
Okay.
He says, first off, do you enjoy Commander?
Oh, yeah, I love Commander. Commander's such a... And, like, right now... The only paper Magic I play is play the rest on Arena. Bless you.
It's that cold I was talking about.
I was about to say, you really are. I'm sorry, you feel so bad, Jay.
Okay.
I'm sending you good vibes with
it. Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
I know. You're like, oh, I feel so much
better. I do.
Yeah, no, Commander, I love it. We get together, we play Commander. It's my preferred way to play because it's face to face, we're a group of people, we have a good time. It's awesome.
What do you like to play when you play Commander?
Depends on the group. Like to have that, like some groups that we already kind of know how they want to play, and if there's new people, we kind of just be like, what deck are you bringing? So I have some people that want to play super hardcore, you know, competitive Commander, interesting to me. And then most of the people I play with, we bring crazy fun decks, but we also like talk about them. So if someone's got a combo deck and combo off and kill the table, they'll let everyone and be like, this is my deck, this is what it does. And so everyone's kind of got, you know, they're playing in time. I switch between playing like more just like I'm engaging with the table at all times decks, like zombies and stuff like that. And then probably the deck I have the most fun with, sure everyone at the table is cool with it, is my Blim deck, which is a deck about playing some of the worst Magic cards in Magic's history and giving them to other people. You know, cards that are like, every time you remove a card from your graveyard, if you can't, you lose the game as an enchantment, and just being like, here, this is yours now. Enjoy that for the rest of the game. It can lead to some really crazy and funny and unpredictable situations, and we can have a laugh. But I always like to make sure I'm like, hey, everybody, are you cool with me giving you just actual bullshit and you having to deal with actual bullshit this entire game? And if they're cool with that, I'll usually break out.
Next question is, do you like drafting?
I unfortunately haven't been able to draft paper in a long time, but I draft on when I have the chance, when I have the kind of the time to sit down and do it. Drafted a lot of Midnight Hunt, drafted a lot of the Forgotten Realms. I have not drafted. One thing that always impresses me about Magic is the variety in ways that you can enjoy a single pack of cards and the different formats from constructed and limited, what you can do with that game. And I am a big fan, because I feel like with limited, you get to play with the other 90 of cards that don't make the constructed cards. Yeah. And for me, that's just cool, because there's a lot of cards in there. You're like, this card's cool. It's like, yeah, but like, it costs mana. You'll never actually cast that. But in limited, you will, and then win games.
All right, so we have a foodie question again. Okay. Do you like grits? And if so, what is your favorite preparation?
Of course I like grits. If you're born in the bayou, you have to. It's in the contract. So where I'm from, the part of the bayou I'm from, we just make grits. Usually you make them with milk, and then you put some salt and pepper on them, maybe a little slice of butter, you're done. I see all these people with cheesy grits and shrimp and grits, you know, all this grits and. Ain't no, it's just grits.
So... I regret to inform you that you're just wrong, and shrimp and grits is amazing.
Now one of us is an expert on that due to our regional birthplace. I don't come to you and tell you what the best is, so don't come to me and tell me what the best grits is. I know people like shrimp and grits and easy grits and all this other stuff, and it's fine. I'm not going to turn my nose up at it, but it's not the best way to have grits.
My absolute favorite is when someone goes pure Yankee and puts something sweet on top of grits, and just watching the Southerners like start twitching and getting upset over it is amazing.
You just don't need to do it. It's not oatmeal. You know, you don't need to have raisins in your grits. They're good. Put some butter in them and you're done. It's like bacon. You don't need to get fancy with bacon. You know, candied bacon and all this other stuff. Just, it's bacon. Either eat it by itself or wrap something, you're done.
All right. So last question from Joe G. He says, if you and Oz were in a gladiatorial fight to the death, what weapon are you taking?
I don't want to fight Oz. I love Oz. Oz and I are forced into a gladiatorial fight to the death. I bring my sharp wit and an attempt to talk him out of killing
me. I'd bring my net so that I can just net him.
Yeah, there's no good way to answer this question. You know, I would never any harm upon Oz. And so I don't want to get into a fight to death, because if you were to fight to death with a random person in a gladiatorial arena, what are you bringing? I'd be like the biggest, fastest gun I get my hands on. That's not true about Oz. I love that man. No, I refuse your question.
All right, so... we got some questions from Bennett now. Okay. He says, where/how do you start when you decide to design a new game?
Concept, usually. Like, what are we making? What is the idea? I'm a top-down game designer. Well, it's the style I prefer. So, first off, we'll make a card game, board game, RPG. That's sort of like baseline stuff. But then, you know, what is this game, and how do we make feel like that game? So is this a racing, like a Mad Max game, where it's going to be racing and combat, or is it a Formula One race? We're just trying to jockey for position. Figure out what your concept is first. The concept will usually give you an idea of some mechanics you know you have to create. So if I'm making a Mad Max, they're very different. But if I'm doing a Mad Max game, I know I need to figure out vehicular combat of some kind. There needs to be a damage system. There needs to be, you know, armor and maybe even upgrades to custom make. Whereas Formula One, I want to focus more on handling, maneuverability, changing the throttle and speed of the vehicle and make it more like making those sort of like maneuver dial style choices. And so once you have that concept, it kind of points you of what is going to be important to this game. And then that's where you is kind of being like, okay, let me figure out what the combat is. Let me figure out what the maneuverability is, and then kind of build out.
All right. So next question from Ben up. He says, ever tried designing outside of your comfort?
Yes. Yeah. I liking thing when I was little, I used to know games, but I used to always be the DM for D&D, like just writing campaign. And so I will sometimes just write mechanics, entire rule system that I do at home because I have an idea. Like, oh, let me write this down while in my head. Sometimes it's literally just I write a dice mechanic, or sometimes I've written full on war game. And sometimes those ideas are way outside of what I've done traditionally. One thing that's always been a really interesting challenge is the idea of designing games for young kids, kids that can't read, maybe kids that can't do math, maybe even kids that don't know their colors. And with those sort of, you know, how can you do something that they will understand and that they'll have fun with and that they'll want to play with parents? And so, yeah, it's something I do when I have the opportunity or when an idea.
All right, so next question. I don't see very many capital ship combat games out there. Is the genre too niche, or is it difficult to design interesting games around this idea?
I don't think it's difficult to design interesting around the idea at all. And you're right, there's not a ton of them out there, but that is a genre I love. You know, whether you're doing traditional naval, they're all kind of in one way or another, whether you're spaceships or it's all usually about positioning, firing, or, you know, how you're gonna shoot your guns, and even often what side of the it is niche in that I think most war gamers, they want to build a wide variety of models. They have soldiers and ships and different things. They like building an army. I couldn't tell you why that is, but just, you know, obviously when we look at the market leaders and what sells well, that is what's most popular. But that's the kind of thing I would absolutely love to design and produce, like 10, 15 millimeter ship combat game, smaller millimeter than that, if it was like, you know, big spaceships. That just seems like an absolute, because those games, I feel like, really live or die maneuverment, and they're all about all ship combat, really. I think there's a lot of room, innovative ideas.
All right, so next question. Best mechanic, according to you, in games, can be video card, board, anything.
Best mechanic in a game? It's a hell of a question, especially since you've said video card, board.
Yeah, not broad or anything.
Yes. What is the best mechanic of all time? I'll tell you some that I'm enjoying right now, but I can't say that they're the best of all time, because I think I would have this far longer to spend on this podcast really thinking about that. I'm really enjoying Aeronautica movement system, specifically, like, there's the movement chart that all the ships share across the hexes, but I really like their idea of the throttle and the elevate system and being able to dive and or climb, and how there's like attack penalties, elevations, that you can have surface to air weapons that shoot up to a certain elevation. And they do a really good job in the game of recreating the idea that we're having a dogfight game, a plane game, but we're not all elevation. We're constantly going up and down. And the rule book that I'm actually reading right now, I'm getting into, is the Lord of the Rings, the Middle Earth strategy from GW. The game's amazing. The rules for that are so well written. That is like one of their designs I think I've ever read. It just plays. It feels so, to the Lord of the Rings, the setting, it just plays so fun. So I'm really enjoying that a lot. But I don't think I can answer best. I have to think longer. I can't.
Okay. Well, his follow-up question is worst. So your thoughts on that?
Worst mechanic? Wow. It's just asking me to throw somebody under the bus here. Worst mechanic, that's probably for video. There's a terrible control scheme. Controlling your character sucks. It's always a bad time. Just can't even play the game. But I'm going to call this a gimmick, but I hate time wall. I know it's more popular, but it existed in MMOs and things like that. Just where they're like, play the game. Now stop and wait. Can't play the game unless you do some crazy thing or pay us money or whatever. And it's just like such a hard stop on the overall experience. Like a mechanic that is meant to stop you from playing is probably the worst game mechanic.
All right. So next question from Ben Up.
Yep.
He says, what's your palate cleanser for board games or video?
My palate cleanser from board games is usually to do something that's not bored, or going out hiking, going out painting, cooking food, hanging out with friends and family. I don't really feel that I ever get to the point with a certain game or genre of game that I need a palate cleanser. So, but if I ever need a break, it doesn't usually happen. I feel like it doesn't happen because if all I did 24/7 was play game,
probably right. Need it. Yeah. All right. So next question. He prefaced this by saying you can obviously no comment if you feel it's an inappropriate question, but looking back on it, are you happy with the design of Riot Quest? He says, parenthetically, I love it, by the way. What lessons did you learn from designing that game? Do you think / wish you could have done something different to improve upon it?
Yeah, I'm super happy with was and is. You know, I learned a lot in the process for such a casual game. What was too much rules? What was too much complexity? A lot of that came the trial and error and bounty decks, the boss fight encounters, and where to tone that back. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think does what it does very well. It's a fun little, let's throw some miniatures down, play a 30-minute, have a good time. That's it. If I could have changed anything, if I had infinite money and infinite production capability, I probably would have made hobby miniatures, pre-painted ones, so that people that were board games that didn't want to paint miniatures could also come just to grow the... And I spent $1 billion or more. But in terms of the game design itself, yeah. When I left Privateer, I don't think there's...
All right, so next question from Ben Up. He says, I just got married. Now I want to see some cool fiction with epic battle couples. Any recommendations?
No. I don't know any fiction that...
What's wrong with you?
I can't think of anything I've read that has battle couples.
Yeah, congratulations, however.
Congrats. I'm just trying to think if I've read anything. Like, right now, I'm being Lord of the Rings. I can't really say, you know, Arwen. No.
You can just read Dune about Paul and Princess Irulan and Chani, his concubine. It's a beautiful love story.
yeah, go do that.
All right. Last question from Ben Up. He says, seen the Netflix show Arcane? What do you think of it?
I have not. I've heard really good things about it, but I have not watched it yet. I don't really follow the League of Legends lore much, but I've heard you don't need to watch that.
I don't like Riot or League of Legends and was super impressed with Arcane.
Okay. Well, yeah, I have no comment.
Last question is related. David says, when will you release the Arcane Runeterra miniatures game?
When will I release the Arcane? When is Rivenstone coming out?
let's say that. Yes. When any updates on
Rivenstone? Rivenstone 72. We haven't announced a release date or distribution method just yet. We are currently, so if you go to brokenanimes.com, 3 weeks ago started the blogs. Right now we're covering the lore. We've done the overall world set, like faction, and introducing everyone to the faction. And then once it's like 5 or 6 parts, and we're like up to part 3 or 4 now. Once the lore introduction series is over, we're getting into gameplay. We're start showing people how the game plays and going through rules. So go check that out. And that is all being up when the game releases. That blog will be going through how it's going to release and talking about cool stuff. So nothing to say other than everything's on track. Getting samples of cards in, stuff's looking good. But like I said, I'm not in the production side of things. It's hard for me to say. Like, I would love to be like, oh, it's good early 20. Could be a liar. Maybe it's summer. Maybe it's late. So it's chugging along.
Awesome. All right. Anything that you want to chime in about?
No, just that I hope you feel better. I'm sorry that you're sick.
Thank you.
We do
need to have a quick moment to discuss the fact that you have watched Dune on HBO, and I need to hear your thoughts.
I will, yes. Before we get into that, I just want to do a quick plug. Check out BrokenAnvilMinis.com. Check out our Patreon as well. You can get a boatload of minis every month for $9. And we are having Black Friday special, all dual downloads, 50% off. So if you want to go get some stuff that was available in previous months you didn't get a chance to get, you can go get that from Black Friday to the following Monday or that. So there's going to be a sale going on where you can get a bunch of 3D print. That's my plug. I'm done. Let's talk about Dune.
Let's do it.
So I watched Dune, and it was a fine movie. We enjoyed it. We streamed it. I didn't realize it was a part one. I thought it was the old movie where they were
I've had a lot of people say that. Yeah.
It was good. It's a movie that definitely, like, I know a lot. I don't know what y'all call yourself. So I'm gonna go with Dune. That were crazy hype, stupid hyped. And I get that. Lord of the Rings, the new Batman coming out, the new Silent Hill came out. I think that really greatly to their joy of the movie.
Yeah. I mean, on the other hand too, though, I was like, also apprehensive about it because I was expecting there was a high possibility of being hurt.
but when it turned out to be good, you're like elation exponentially greater.
Yes.
And so for those of us that aren't, we went and watched the movie and we're like, yeah, it's a good movie. Like, I enjoyed it. I watched it once, and somebody had it on, and that's what they were doing. Watch it again. But I know there were people that were like, oh, I've watched it. I saw it streaming, and then I saw it in IMAX twice, stuff like that. And it was not at that level. It's just it's cool. A lot of cool things happened here, and I will see part two comes out, but I didn't have the like hardcore build fandom to go crazy like other.
That's fair. That is fair enough. So,
I also didn't know, how many giant worms are there? All I know is from what I saw in the day, this giant worm, big guy, he floats, he's a bad guy, he's Chucky Kentucky and Paul Idaho, and they fight in the desert. They got crazy, crazy block shield.
There you go.
All that was true.
That's correct. All right. Well, we'll let you get back to your real work, Will. Thank you again for sharing your time with us. We appreciate it.
Of course. And if anybody has any questions, for next episode, please send them. I will answer the best of my ability, unless they're incredibly difficult, like what is your favorite thing in the world, or if they're things I can't answer, like what is the MSRP and all of which I don't know.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Will, and everyone, enjoy your holidays.
Happy Thanksgiving.